Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Let's cross over to Israel for the Israel Report, and that is brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israeli Property Management and Sales.
The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, Boker Tov, good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov, we've got an interesting only in Israel story to start with, and this involves Prime Minister Yair Lapid, who last week hosted the Emirati Foreign Minister, who was here in Israel to celebrate the two-year anniversary of the Abraham Accords. This is Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed, who came to Israel for that occasion. And we understand that Prime Minister Yair Lapid and Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed went out to eat at a restaurant in Tel Aviv privately. This was not an official do. This was a private thing, two friends going to eat at a restaurant in Tel Aviv. We are told that the Prime Minister paid for the meal with his own money. But here is the thing. The restaurant wasn't kosher.
Oh, goodness.
So what's the deal on all of that? Now, we know for a fact that Prime Minister Yair Lapid is not observant, and he
nor does he
bother about eating in a non-kosher establishment at all. I don't know about the Muslim side of things, and I'm certainly not going to try to include that in this particular discussion. But we do know that it is the Israeli government's policy to make sure, especially at official events, that all food that is to be consumed by Israeli official delegations abroad and in Israel should be kosher.
Right.
Even if you are Yair Lapid and you don't care.
Right.
But what do listeners think about Yair Lapid taking Sheikh Abdullah bin Zayed to a non-kosher restaurant in Tel Aviv on their own time, doing their own thing, paying for it with their own money? Is this a problem for us? What do you think?
34519 or 061-895-1019. But he really does seem to be doing some amazing work in New York. Incredibly busy meeting with a lot of significant people. So let's talk about that. He's going to be speaking to he's addressing the UN General Assembly, but there's a lot of work being done outside of this.
There is a lot of work being done outside of this. I am quite enthusiastic in waiting for his address to the UN General Assembly tomorrow. And I sort of wonder to myself how you can perhaps shake things up a little bit at these addresses to the UN General Assembly. And let's not forget that this is like a conveyor belt of addresses. All the countries who are members of the General Assembly get the opportunity to address the General Assembly at this time. And so it's like a conveyor belt of all the leaders and presidents, whoever, coming along to the General Assembly. We've seen former Israeli prime ministers deliver their addresses in the past, most notably former Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, who quite memorably brought along all kinds of props and pictures and things like that in order to shake these up. And we also remember former Prime Minister Naftali Bennett giving his address last year. This will be Yair Lapid's first opportunity to address the General Assembly in the capacity as Prime Minister. And I wonder what he's going to be doing tomorrow to try and shake things up a little bit and to make it a little more memorable. Clearly, Iran is going to be on the agenda. Of that, you can be absolutely sure. It's not clear exactly what else he will choose to talk about, but I'm quite enthusiastically waiting to see what he has to talk about. But as you rightly point out, he's been extremely busy around the edges. And most notably yesterday, he met with King Abdullah of Jordan. This was the second time that the two have met since Yair Lapid became prime minister. And we understand that the main topic of their discussion was all around the uptick that we see in Palestinian terror activities. And it's interesting that when King Abdullah gave his address to the General Assembly, I was quite puzzled when he said that Christians feel a threat when in Jerusalem to visit holy sites. Of course, he also drew in Muslims, the fact that the status quo on the Temple Mount has not been maintained because once upon a time it was only Muslims who were allowed to pray there. Now there is some tolerance to Jewish prayer on the Temple Mount. And so, of course, he addressed that issue in his address to the General Assembly yesterday. But in the discussion that he held with Prime Minister Yair Lapid, it was all about the issue of Palestinian terror. And it is no surprise to me that the Prime Minister chose to raise this with the King of Jordan, because it seems as if there is more and more involvement by official Palestinian organizations representing security forces, representing government, representing some of the official bodies of the Palestinian Authority. More and more involvement we see, and I'm not suggesting that it is necessarily, let's say, state-sponsored in the sense that they are being sent by the Palestinian Authority to carry out these acts of terror, but it is certainly tolerated in their position as an official representative of the Palestinian Authority, and then they go and carry out a terror attack against Israel. And this seems to be very much tolerated by the Palestinian Authority. And so Yair Lapid told King Abdullah that Israel will not stand idly by and will fight terrorism directed against it in all its forms. And then he went on to tell King Abdullah that as far as Israel is concerned, this wave of terror from the Palestinians and the Palestinian Authority sponsorship needs to stop between now and Rosh Hashanah over the weekend. That is the deadline that was offered to the King of Jordan. And there is little doubt that the King of Jordan has influence within the Palestinian Authority. And that's why it comes as no surprise to me that the Prime Minister chose to raise this with the King of Jordan, because he thinks that there needs to be pressure from within the Palestinian Authority to somehow put a stop to this. So quite an interesting discussion.
Which is so fascinating, and it's so upsetting in a way, because it just shows how coordinated it is and how simple it is to actually stop if there's a willingness to do so.
Well, potentially, yes, but of course, every action has a potential consequence. And so, for example, if the Palestinian Authority was seen to be putting a stop to these terror activities and seen, therefore, to be cooperating with Israel, there are, of course, other consequences. And there's another story that I'd like to talk about events that took place in Ramallah Nablus, last night, which is related to this particular story. But before we move on to that, I also just want to add that Prime Minister Yair Lapid today is due to, yesterday, met with President Erdogan of Turkey, which is the first time that the two leaders have met since Israel has restored diplomatic relations with Turkey. And in fact, an ambassador to Turkey has already been appointed and sent to Istanbul to present his credentials to renew the diplomacy between Israel and Turkey. So that was an interesting meeting yesterday as well. Today, we understand the Prime Minister is due to meet the new Prime Minister of the UK, Liz Truss. And he is also, I believe, due to meet the Prime Minister of Greece. So he really is working pretty hard in New York before he makes his address to the General Assembly tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think doing a phenomenal job. I'd love your thoughts on that. 34519 or 0618951019. How do you think he is doing? Palestinian factions agreed to a ceasefire after violence erupted between them in Nablus last night. This is what you referred to earlier.
Yeah, so this is a situation where Hamas and Fatah are at loggerheads with each other. Hamas operatives within the Palestinian Authority area were arrested yesterday by Palestinian Authority security forces, and this caused a massive eruption of violence within Nablus yesterday, within Shechem, which is also known as Nablus. And as a result of that, the representatives from Hamas and Fatah had to be brought together in order to effectively declare a ceasefire between the two organizations following this huge outbreak of violence. And as part of the ceasefire arrangements, those Hamas members who were arrested by the Palestinian Authority security forces apparently are due to be released. They're currently, I understand, being held in the Palestinian Authority-controlled Jericho prison. And the two Hamas members who were very, very active in promoting Hamas and Hamas's agenda within the Palestinian Authority. Apparently, they are due to be released. Now, as part of this, the violence between the two factions last night, a person was killed and apparently more than 55 people were injured. So it was a fairly serious event involving violence within Nablus. And as I said earlier, when the Palestinian Authority is seen to be cooperating with Israel, it potentially has a major impact on the Palestinian Authority's relationship and therefore Fatah's relationship with other entities, including Hamas, and potentially even further afield than that. And let's not also forget that the Palestinian Authority is very much dependent upon money which is being donated from other Muslim Arab countries, and that money also comes with certain conditions. It's not just a freebie, give you the money, do with it as you please. No, there are certain conditions which are attached to it, and that the Palestinian Authority could potentially be damaging their source of income by being seen to be too close to cooperating with Israel in a security sort of way. So on the one hand, the Prime Minister has said to the King of Jordan, put a stop to this between now and Rosh Hashanah over the weekend. On the other hand, any visible cooperation that the Palestinian Authority has with Israel also creates a violent eruption. So it's doomed if you do and doomed if you don't, or damned if you do and damned if you don't, for the Palestinian Authority, and hence the difficulty that they have in treading this path between all the various pressures that they have to endure.
Very, very interesting. 34519 or 061-895-1019, your reaction, please. And then Israel is accused of hiding an ex-crime chief from Mexico. Goodness. What lies behind this accusation?
Well, this first of all, it seems as if the individual concerned, who is a former criminal agency chief, and his name is Thomas Zeron DeLuccio, he is accused apparently of being involved in the deaths of 43 Mexican students back in 2014. We now understand from the press that he's been hiding out in Israel for more than 2 years, and that Mexico has requested that he be extradited to face charges involving the deaths of these 43 Mexican students, but that the whole extradition process is taking its time, that Israel is being accused of dragging its feet, either because of potentially they don't have good diplomatic relations with Mexico, and therefore Israel doesn't really have it in its interests to try to promote the extradition process. But there is also this little strange inclusion of DeLuccio's involvement with the Israeli cyber defense establishment, and in particular the name of NSO Group, which is a very, very well-known or a well-known Israeli company for cyber defense tools, but also is somewhat notorious because NSO's tools have been accused of being used against established governments which Israel has good diplomatic relations with. The NSO has been accused of allowing its software to be used against leaders of those governments, and therefore the Israeli government has had a lot of problem with NSO and the software that it's used. But here NSO has been dragged in again in the context of Mexico, where apparently NSO is accused of having sold its cell phone hacking technology to government and other users against journalists in Mexico and against other opposition figures. So when it comes to phone hacking tools, it doesn't matter whether it's used by the establishment against people who are potentially opponents of the establishment or whether it's involved with use against the establishment itself. You kind of can't fall out on the right side of that particular discussion. Whatever you do, it's going to be damned if you do and damned if you don't, to use this phrase again. But apparently this whole extradition process is really taking time, and Israel is being accused therefore of actually harboring this person who is wanted by the Mexican government, and there are other Israeli individuals, quite well-known individuals whose names have also been mentioned, people who apparently have given quite luxury accommodation to Deluccio for him to be able to stay here while he hides out against the accusations that are being leveled against him by the Mexican government. So a lot of this really revolves around whether, you know, Israel's somewhat negative diplomatic relations with Mexico are playing a role here in either dragging their feet in actually stopping the extradition process, or alternatively, at least not doing anything to progress it in any sort of way. And the extradition process in general is a very, very convoluted story. And of course, the government that is requesting the extradition needs to bring very, very convincing evidence to the country that is being requested to extradite the individual to be able to convince them that the extradition has some sort of legal justification and justice, and not just simply somebody being asked to be grabbed in an unjustified sort of way. So when it comes to extraditions, it's all very fraught in any event. But apparently Israel is being accused of hiding this individual where he's wanted for these murders. And by the way, not for the first time, unfortunately, Israel has stood accused previously of allowing individuals to hide out here, particularly against countries where there is no extradition agreement, and therefore individuals can come here and effectively Israel has no obligation to extradite them because there is no agreement involved. But I think that this is an interesting story. Let's also just throw into the mix the Jewish community in Mexico, which is a relatively substantial community. And I just wonder to what extent this might affect the relationship that the Jews in Mexico have with their local government as a result of Israel dragging its feet. It's amazing that everything that Israel does potentially has an impact on the local Jewish community.
Yeah, it really does. It's absolutely fascinating. And I'm just actually looking because there was a, and I want to discuss this tomorrow with you, being the last day that we'll chat before the Jewish New Year. So it's always good to look at the stats, the number of people, Jews in Israel and things like that. And I'm just looking at a list here that says there are 40,000. Mexico has the 14th largest Jewish community in the world. 40,000 right. Jews in Mexico, and that yeah. obviously does have an impact. After the break, after the news, and after that great song, I'm going to talk about that. What are the Jewish communities? What are the numbers of the Jewish communities around the world? Anthony Reich, tomorrow, let's look at some of the numbers, specifically with regard to Israel, how the year has been for people in Israel, what are the common names that people have chosen for their babies. It's always a lovely time to stop and look at some of the achievements over the last year. It is about to go 8 o'clock. The Israel Report brought to you with the compliments of the Blue Agency, Israel's property management and sales.